This is the First Time Podcast,
where we talk writing, publishing, and all of the feels.
It's conversations between us
and conversations with Australian and international authors about their craft, their books, and the writing life. I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to the First Time Podcast, Season 6. This podcast was recorded and produced on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri and Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures.
Hello, Catherine Collette.
Hi, Kate Mildenhall. We are in the final episode of the season.
I don't even know how we got here. Yeah, both grinning. It's been a big season. It's going to be a big episode.
Oh my God. I feel like we have limped towards the end.
Yeah.
We just psychologically still great content, but
always great content here on the First Time Podcast.
I saw actually the stats from your book tour on Instagram today. Wowzers.
Yes. There's something, you probably do stats more often than I do in your work, but there is something about getting the numbers which validates the need to nap or whatever it is that I was like, I feel a little wobbly.
How good are naps? Like there was, I think I only started napping once I had kids. And I think, God, what glorious little sleeps did I miss out on? That's so good.
Exactly. And this, we're recording on Wednesday when the weather, well, here where I am is quite rainy.
Miserable. Very dreary.
Perfect napping time, honestly. So Catherine, I went back this morning and listened to our first episode of this year, season 6 in March. There's a lot to unpack there. At that point, you were in the draft zero of your middle grade novel?
Wow. Was I? No, I must have been in the draft zero of the one we workshopped when we went away.
All right, that makes more sense.
Which is actually something I recommend, is more than one project at the same time.
I mean, very for people good. Who are multi-talented like you.
Not really. I think just more as a, like, taking advantage of waiting times. I don't know what I've done previously. But now I feel like if I'm waiting for something, I have something else.
Just get cracking on something new. Yes. Yeah. Yes, that is a very good point. Twitter was still live for us. We were still on Twitter. That was a funny thing that I noticed from here to there, that is not happening anymore. X, exactly. I hadn't yet announced in the first episode, I was about to receive the copy edit for The Hummingbird Effect, and it had not yet been announced that it was coming out this year. So that was funny. Also, it made me realize, because we talked about our summers as we always do, and there was a bit of fishing talk, and I realized that fishing has been for you quite a theme this year, would you say?
Oh my God, there was so much fishing last summer. This year, I think I'm feeling very grateful because Carney went surfing relatively recently and got hit by a wave and hurt his shoulder in a pretty severe way. So for the last 2 weeks, we've thought that he's going to have major surgery, no holiday.
I want to jump in here to say, that's bad for Carney, obviously. Like, sorry about the shoulder injury. But the biggest thing when you sent an email and was like, I don't think the beach is going to happen, in caps. And I was so devastated for you.
It actually, I feel like I have been juggling sand for the last sort of 3 weeks, but I think it got to the point, not to put myself at the center of it and the center of the healing process, but I will anyway. The point at which I got to, and I had been so resistant, I just was like clinging to the shred of an idea that we would get to go away. I got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to have to accept that. And for the next 3 weeks, I'm not going to do anything that I want to do. There'll be more beyond that, but the next few weeks are going to be intense. So I got to the point of acceptance, and then Carney got a second and a third opinion and things have changed. We will still not be able to fish very much this summer.
Oh, no, Catherine. Like
little potty mullet fishing. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, dear.
But does this mean you'll be in charge of it, the fishing?
Well, I think Carney thinks that he can do prawning, which prawning's not so bad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But no, really, it discounts the big serious fishing, which is fun once a week, but not multiple times a week. So life's not really good.
Continue the fishing theme of the first time podcast in 2023. But did you hear about the, I think it's Victorian government plus the Fishing and Anglers Association, I will try and find the link to verify this, is giving every grade 4 student a fishing rod.
No.
I saw it.
I've got researches too.
Yeah, Etta came home and said, oh, all the grade 4s are getting a fishing rod next year. And I was like, oh, as if that doesn't make sense. Then I looked it up and lo and behold, there it was.
Seriously. Oscar would be thrilled, but yeah. That is kind of weird.
Kind of weird. You know, a few more books wouldn't go astray for some public schools. But anyway, fishing rod's great. I'm sure that that's also helpful.
Wow. Anyway, okay, we'll hadn't heard that. That'll be a topic of conversation in this house. Yes. So I feel doubly pleased that in 2 weeks I'm going to be off to the beach and there's probably not going to be that much fishing. And we're taking two cars and I come back early to do work for a week.
Which I feel like you have really nailed the
I've like perfected the holiday, which was always good, but yeah, I've really fine-tuned it.
What about
How are you feeling? How long till you go away?
We won't go away till just before New Year's, but I've just started the Snapfish book. So I'm sure I've said this before. Aww. I am one of those nerdy humans who does a book of photos for my family every year.
Love that.
And I have just started it and it was so delightful. I actually sent a message to my girlfriends to say, can we do summer well? Like I'm just in the photos of the beach and the New Year's parties and everyone in, you know, ballet dress ups. And it's just, I'm like, we're so close. We just have to get across the line, right?
Yeah. I heard of a photo book like that. That's a subscription service. And it, every 30 days they send you a photo book out based on your Instagram feed for them. So if you're a prolific Instagram poster, that would be cool. Mine would have about 2 images.
Yeah, and mine would not have worked for the last 3 months, which is purely hummingbird content. But, you know, we will shift out of that very soon. So in a finale, what we generally do is wrap up the year in various ways. We also just as a, I don't know, how do they do that thing? As a teaser, we have some very big news that is coming to you later in this episode. So please stick around for that. But first, Catherine, what have been your writing life? Now, I specified that because I didn't want you to say the Cryo Castle. What have been your writing life highlights of the year?
Cryo Castle was very good. Can I say that? Like if you were on the fence about Cryo Castle, like not sure if you need to book the accommodation, which actually was not as cheap as I had made up in my head at the castle, but it was a whole lot of fun. And yeah,
I love that
was a good one. That was a great one, self. From a writing point of view, 2-book contract with HarperCollins for my middle book series was a total highlight. I think that you kind of back yourself, but that process of going through submission is like you really have to hold your steel.
Hold your nerve.
Hold your nerve. Because just the silence of across a few weeks, because obviously, you know, while you press send or your agent or whoever presses send, people don't respond immediately. That waiting is so unsettling. So that was super excited. And I'm like doubly pleased to be able to illustrate it.
Well, I'm so excited about that. In fact, I've said this to you before. I keep on going to do like Christmas shopping for books, and because your book is in my head, I keep going to look for it on the shelf, and they're like, "Oh no, that'll be next Christmas."
I did as well. Oscar's class, the teacher invited me along to speak to the grade four.
Yes? How did you go?
Oh my God, it was so good. So I just had to do 2 20-minute presentations to two groups of kids. Originally, you had given me a great concept about mini books, and I worked all of that out, was all set with it. Then the day before, told Oscar, and he's like, "We've done that."
Oh no.
And I was like, what? What? Anyway, so I paired it right back and did something really basic. But oh my God, may everyone in life be able to give a book talk or just a general talk to a group of like 58-year-olds. They sat, so I sat at a chair at the front of the room. They were literally inches, set like millimeters away. They were all so huddled in and so close. They were just staring up at me. I had printed some illustrations. So Oscar got me to like we picked out a few illustrations, and then I kind of had an A5 sheet that had one on each side to hand out. They were all different ones. Anyway, I said at the start that I'd give them illustrations from the book that was coming out, and they literally just cheered. Like it was the most heartwarming, gratifying moment. It was just so beautiful. And I really didn't know what that would be like. And it was ace. I loved it. It was really cute.
I sense here, Catherine, that perhaps you might enjoy doing some school visits next year when the book comes out. People,
I did not think
touch.
I would like that. I could not believe how lovely kids were. And part of the reason they'd invited me in was because they're each writing their own stories and they're making them into books and all
that.
Did
they want to tell you their ideas?
Yeah.
I mean, in that way, they're no different to adult writers that you meet who also want to tell you their
exactly,
ideas.
No, exactly. Exactly.
But,
joy. Massively cute. And I took in different books of different copies of my books, like The Helpline from Overseas, and asked them which one they liked. And it was really cute.
Did you get
it. It
any really strange questions?
Just trying to think of questions. I probably got quite a few odd comments, like, you know, just things that they liked. They also made me the next day I went and picked Oscar up, and they'd each made me a card.
Oh,
the cards were extremely cute. Really, oh really goodness. Cute. So I have a whole stack of them sitting on my desk. The other writers highlight my middle grade writers group, which includes Ingrid Laguna, Elsa Wilde, and Fiona Hardy. We didn't get to meet half as much as we would have liked, but it's such a nice little group, and I'm so pleased to have it, and I look forward to meeting them. When we get to do that, it's very hard organizing people's diaries. Another one was the retreat that you and Anna and I did really not very long ago at all, but in particular, the workshopping process that we did around each of us had a book in sort of a little bit developed, but really early-ish stages, you know, not much writing had happened. That is such a cool process to do, to really the ideas that you get from other people and how quickly, because there's those things that you sit on for ages around, I know I have a body, the body's here, and I want, you know, I want them to have died of this, say, and to have two other people aside from yourself working on the tricky bits and saying, well, that wouldn't work for X, Y, Z, like fantastic. So, so good.
I love to, I've been thinking about it since, that idea of being really playful and open with your idea before you kind of have really made it too concrete
invested
for yourself. Yeah, because I feel like I've still been like having these wild ideas for my new one and going, oh yeah, thinking about how we were in that dynamic and kind of going, oh yeah, that might work, like that's kind of crazy, but I really feel like it was very generative and open. Yeah
super fun,
except that I nearly got you two lost on the Alpine Trail, and there were leeches.
There were leeches, gross. I had thought about leeches the previous. I've only ever had one leech. Anna Downs does not into the leeches.
You two were
not
hilarious.
Into the leeches.
Hilarious.
But writing-wise, I have not released a book, but I feel like, and probably life in general, that it's been a good year. It has feel like a year of flourishing.
Things
have felt like they're coming to fruition or come to fruition. It's been good.
I like that.
I am now going to toss it back to you. We have seen the stats of the book tour, but that's only part of the experience. What's been the writing highlight?
Well, I got to say, like I was trying to think on this, and I think that it doesn't get much past holding the thing in your hands when you've been working on it for 4 years, you know, and it's been so bloody hard, like that's still just nothing much surpasses that. I was writing that blog post this morning and I couldn't even start to like write down booksellers or events because I was like, I'm just going to have to list the whole 92 of them because everything was so delightful. And I think it was coming out of that, you know, not being able to get about out and about for the Motherfold that I just loved.
Yeah.
The energy.
And you got to go all
buzz.
In. Like you really got to carve out a space.
Yeah.
To all do
in.
It.
That, all in. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing too, I ticked off the second official milestone of my PhD last week. But what's been, and you know, and I've been on leave for that for a lot of the year because of the hummingbird stuff. But what's been really interesting about that opportunity is because it involves looking at my own creative process in part, I've gone back through a lot of my journals for the Motherfold and just seeing how broken the novel was and how little I understood it and how little I knew about it and the kind of crazy quick changes and momentum that came from different things. Like it is, it's quite extraordinary to look at that and go, wow, I really did not think that this would work. And then to, you know, listen to people say what their response has been to the novel. That's been kind of incredibly validating. And the other exciting thing, when I listened back to that first episode, I was saying that in that waiting period, which you've just been talking about too, that, you know, when you want to start something new, I had said, I can feel my writing, you know, antennas kind of going out for something new. And I loved that that happened. The antennas went out. Yeah, I found something new. You know, I'm now going into this summer with a brand new idea and I'm super excited about it. So I love that.
We did a re-release of an episode last week and we ended up re-releasing Kevin Wilson. In our original discussions, we'd said, oh, we'll re-release an old one. So an old episode from the very beginning. And I listened back. I tried listening to a couple of them. The bits I really liked were us talking. Like it was fun hearing us so fresh-faced. I mean, you couldn't see us. I don't know, fresh voice.
You could hear it in the voice, though.
Yeah, like that was really nice. One I was listening to was on promotional YouTube videos. And we, I mean, behind the scenes.
Oh, my gosh. Is that when you had to do the things?
Yeah. I had to do this terrible acting piece that I was pretty hopeless at and didn't even sort of look like I hadn't brushed my hair in many days. But anyway, behind the scenes, we had talked about Holly Ringland and we were sort of following the rise of Holly Ringland. And I mentioned in this podcast, I think I looked up you had also done like a promotional YouTube and looked at how many people had watched it and then how many had watched mine because mine had just come out. And then we were looking at Holly Ringland's as well. And she had a lot more views than we had.
She continues to have.
She continues to have. She's done extraordinarily well. But the thing that made me not release the episodes was listening to interviews that I had done. And it was actually a cool thing because I was like, wow, what a long way. That was a cool moment to see, wow, you really can see growth and evolution.
That is
in
so
that.
Good.
Like that was, it was worth, I mean, I don't know if I'm directing other people back to it. Obviously, they're still on the feed. There's some good conversations, but I think now I think a lot about interviewing. Yeah. I like, and I think we probably both do this. You look at other people's interviews, what questions they ask, kind of critique them, what they could have done differently.
Yeah.
Collect sort of tips and tricks. And I will often write down great questions if someone has a really good question.
Yeah. I love that. And I agree. I concur. I don't want to necessarily go back and listen to those ones.
God. But this is also like a cool thing around taking a risk and not completely being ready. But really the only way to learn was to go, we have to go, we're going in, we're doing it, even though we're like not necessarily amazing at it yet.
I think you sound like Ben Crow.
Do you know what you will hear? Yeah, well, that's true. Through my listening recommendation, I think I am deep in a particular headspace right now.
Oh my anyway, gosh, I love that. Let's get on to our podcast highlights of the year. What are your podcast highlights?
That is a great question, and not one I have even thought about, actually. Right. I thought about writing once, but I think for me, we've probably both been thinking a lot about the podcast lately in this, our sixth season. The highlight, I mean, there's always two highlights. One is that we get to chat every week. I think that is a particularly special thing. Obviously, you have friendships. You know, we have all kinds of different friendships, but to have a friendship with someone that it feels like you kind of have a job with and a reason to have to talk each week or each fortnight is sort of doubly nice, really.
It is. It is. I like
and
that.
And the other, yeah, me too. And the other lovely part of it is just interviews with writers in general, I think is a pretty cool thing to be able to do.
And I think too, and looking back over this year, we'll do some stats in a second, but you know, interviews with writers always. And we have both got to speak to authors this year who we've wanted to speak to for a really long time, which I think just feels amazing. Like, again, feels like, okay, if you chart this kind of growth from when we were begging people to come on the podcast to now that we get to speak to these amazing people, is so cool. One of my highlights was getting to hang out with Kate Kennedy at her house, which was like the very first Masters ep this year, but and going op shopping and just the joy of getting to do that face-to-face time and long form kind of interviewing. That was such a joy. But I think if I had to put it down to one moment, that my top moment, which is really, I think, illustrates the kind of community that has formed around, you know, the listeners and the guests that we have on the First Time podcast, was when Karen Comer listened to the interview with Susie Anderson, author of Body Country, a book of poetry, which was one of our featured books. And Karen heard the call out for us to get the book to Darcy Moore at Collingwood, and she did it. And now Susie Anderson has this pic of Darcy Moore holding her book of poetry. And I just think it was the perfect illustration of all that stuff of ecosystems and connection that we talk about.
Also, a pretty lovely moment. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about Collingwood Football Club in the final episode of the season. So I just managed to get that.
Do you know, I was talking to Angela Savage when I went birdwatching, and so they pick a bird of the year each year, and she really wants it to be the tawny frogmouth, but
it was not the tawny frogmouth.
It has not gotten up, but this is across multiple years. One year, Eddie Maguire encouraged all Magpie supporters to kind of ruin the purity of the competition and select the Magpie, which is a fine bird, but really want it picked for that reason.
True. I mean, this is the power.
I actually hate magpies. I'll say it. If you've ever been swooped by a magpie,
hanging out on my balcony at the moment on my deck, and it's quite cute. Although if I leave the door open, it does come inside, which, you know, is a bit annoying. Can you tell me, Catherine Collette, what you've got coming up in 2024, please?
2024. So I'll have my new middle grade book coming out. They have said September, but they've also said it'll probably come out earlier. So I'm super duper looking forward to that. I get feedback on illustrations next week, I think. I did the copy edit, realized I had made a poor choice deciding not to do the copy edit, not even looking at the copy edit while we were on retreat. Why did I do that?
You were
so
confident.
That was the worst choice.
She is chill about this.
That was such a bad choice. There was so much more to it. So that dogged me for a little while. But the copy edit is in, waiting on the illustrations. Very interesting process doing pictures and words, but enjoying it. So that's one thing. And then podcast related, we will get to towards the end.
Where are you up to in the writing of the next one?
The second book needs to be about 40,000 words, and I've got 20,000 good words. So I just need to write, and I've got a plan for the next quarter.
Does it involve Maccas in the morning?
I reckon it might. It'll definitely involve writing probably for an hour a day while I'm away, but that is optional in some ways, but also pleasurable. Like, I like that. Get up, do it for an hour, just inch it forward. That's sort of a preferred way of doing it. So, yeah, but I really want to get back into this book. I will enjoy writing that, and I'm liking what it is about, but I'm also excited to get into this book that you guys workshopped with me. And,
that's the other bonus awesome. Of having a couple of projects on the go, huh, mm. is that the other one is kind of like knocking at you and like scratching yeah. at you to say, come and look at me, look at me.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Definitely. Definitely. What, Kate Mildenhall, do you have coming up in 2024?
Well, I have a super exciting news that I don't think we've said on the podcast yet, that I am going to be a picture book writer next year, which is super exciting. I can't say.
This has been in the works for ages, so I can't believe we've never mentioned
it. So long, I know. It's all been humming along under the surface, but I can't let you know the illustrator yet, but I'm just going to say that they are wonderful. And kind of like you saying about doing the pictures, obviously I'm not doing the pictures myself, but just the process of seeing your words come to life in pictures is like the best.
Well, I think what's cool about that in particular is that it's someone else, you're seeing inside someone else's brain. Yeah. Like it's yes. that thing of no two people read the same story. Oh. This is like them pulling that story out of their yeah. brain and putting it on the page.
Collaboration.
That is a cool
collaboration.
Thing.
It's all about that. So that is super exciting. That'll be out at the moment in September. And just after that, I will cross fingers, hand in the last part of my PhD and tick that one off the list.
How do you feel about the PhD? Has the PhD, like, do you feel excited about it, or is it more job-like?
A little bit of
or
both.
Is it? Yeah.
A little
okay.
bit of both. Bit job-like. But yeah, like when I get into it and when I focus on the stuff, it is really exciting. It's exciting being in that world yeah. of ideas and finding out new things. But also a bit job-like. I really should have been a smart person and just put aside other things and focused completely on it. But I have not done that, because the other thing I'll be doing in 2024 is working on this new novel. And I want to do this one, Catherine, and I'm putting it in the audio world and saying it out loud. I want to do this one fast. I am planning on writing, having the first draft done before the picture book comes out. So that is the 31st of August. I want to have this first draft done. So I'm planning on working a bit differently this time. I'm doing a lot of planning and I'm really excited about it. So that's what next year is looking like at the moment.
2024. Very exciting.
Huge. Now, we really hate doing favorite book lists. When I see other ones come up already, I'm just like, oh my gosh, how are people even doing this? I'm generally paralyzed by anxiety about leaving books out. So we're just going to do our regular recommendations rather than a sum up yes. of the year. So I know you said you're a little light on in this department at the moment, Catherine. What have you been listening to?
This is the one thing I have been doing. I've not been reading. I've not been watching reality TV, even though this is, we say this all the time, the golden era, but this is the golden part of the year for reality TV, but I still have not been watching. Okay, the thing I have been utterly obsessed with is a recommendation that was made to me by author and friend of the pod, Bronwyn Birdsall. It is an app/program called How to Be To Be Magnetic. I always want to call it How to Be Magnetic. It's called To Be Magnetic.
Sounds great.
It is the number one manifestation podcast app program in the world. I am not sure how heavily that title is contested. So it's a bit woo-woo, but they're also very quick to add that this particular program is also backed by neuroscience, epigenetics, and energetics.
What is energetics, Catherine Collette?
Oh, I was hoping you'd ask what epigenetics is, because I know what that is. I looked it up.
Do that one first. What is epigenetics?
Okay. Epigenetics is It is a real actual scientific thing that is about.
The fact that you said real actual and thing makes it completely unscientific.
I know. It does, but it is. It is an actual thing that it is about how your genes can change based on behaviors and environment, which is kind of counter to previous thinking that was genes were fixed. So it's got, so the program has neuroscience, woo-woo, it has epigenetics, and then it has energetics. I do not know what energetics is. I have
okay, but it's clearly working for you because you are like glowing.
That could be like, that could be the questionable element of it. Okay. I will say that on the one hand, I always feel like a bit of a wanker talking about manifestations. I feel skeptical in some ways. On the other hand, I love it and I am obsessed with it. So reach out and let me know if you are also in this kind of a foot in each camp. I'm currently deep in their rabbit hole. They do an annual manifestation challenge. It goes for 6 weeks. We're in week three. I cannot get enough of it. So I have this app and I have an activity 5 days of 7 days. They also have a podcast called Expanded, which I have been listening to. So they have a lot of really interesting points informed by neuroscience, epigenetics, and energetics. But one of the things that they talk about is that a lot of the very popular manifestation stuff that has historically been out there has really worked with the conscious brain. And so you would come up with things that you want, and then an example of something you might do would be to visualize what it is you want, or to think and try and feel that you have this thing already. It's very operating at this conscious level, whereas their argument is that you actually don't manifest from the conscious level, you manifest from the subconscious level. And that part of manifestation is that you have to think that something is actually possible. An example would be the 4-minute mile was always this barrier that people didn't really think could be broken. And so for many, 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 many years, it was not broken. Someone breaks it, and then three people break it that year. Similar writing example would be this sort of phenomenon of you will have a writer's group. You all really, really want to be published. One person in the group gets published, and suddenly you're all like, hey, hang on, if this person can do it, I can definitely do it. So you're thinking of your subconscious thinking that changes. So you still have this conscious kind of goal of, I want this and these are the things that I want, but what's changed is suddenly you're like, actually, this is completely possible. The other thing that I really like, and actually you are a real manifester because, and I think this often because there is so much subconscious in you. We talked at an event, a live event that we did recently, and there was this moment where you had talked about, I won't go into the specifics of it, but a thing that you wanted and you openly put out there, and you said, I have booked a hair appointment for that day.
Yeah.
Which is so like manifesting, and it would be very consistent with this this kind of process.
I was just thinking about that conversation on two levels. One, because I have to make a public apology because I said that you were a fan. I was meant to say that you're into this manifesting stuff, and I said that you were a fan of The Secret, and you were like, no, I'm not. And so I apologize for that profusely because it's not
The
Secret.
I have mentioned The Secret on the podcast.
You have, about five seasons ago. And so now it's more this manifesting stuff. Yes, and I've talked about before the fact that my amazing coven writing gang with Penny Russin and Penny Harrison and Zana Freilon, we do as an activity each year, we write down the things we want in the back of my little black list book, and then we check if we get them the next year. And it is profound how often that works. Penny talked about it when we did an event earlier this year and kind of invited all the audience to be the other member of our coven and manifest something. And I got some feedback from people that it was pretty powerful.
It's powerful. Well, I even think of the middle grade book. I had that on my list and I had very specific things around it. I said I wanted it to be a 2-book deal. I wanted it to be a series. That my agent did not go out with that on the table, that it would be 2 books, that it would be. So just even sort of that specificity of certain things. What I also like about this 2Be Magnetic program is it asks you to look at why you want the things that you're manifesting. And so you kind of have to break down if the if your reasons are ego-based. So if you want, I want to win this award, but that's actually all just about validation. It's not about, well, I want a life that is about creativity and I want certain freedoms that, you know.
Yeah.
So I am enjoying it immensely. I feel like I've had a good year that has led to this point anyway, but it's just, there's that nice thing about end of the year restocking and re kind of looking forward exactly as you do with your coven. So I will put the links. None of this is paid or recommended or any of that kind of stuff. The challenge is going on at the moment. I think you could still do it. I said it goes for 6 weeks. It's week three, but they kind of have a, like you can have a staggered start. It does have an end date for which you can't, but they say that 98 point something percent of people that completed the course manifest things on their wish, the things on their wish list. And there's a particular way you create a wish list within 6 months.
So, that's it. You've sold me. I'm doing it. Send me the links after this immediately before the show notes go up.
It's cool. It's a nice mix of dreaming and also questioning why you have certain dreams and why you, whether you think things are possible and if maybe you've kind of been standing in your own way in that respect. So
I want to segue immediately from that into one of my watching recommendations, because you, if you haven't watched it yet, I think you will love it, is Naiad on Netflix. Have you watched it yet?
No, I haven't watched it. I've never heard of it.
Okay. Oh my goodness. I'm so excited to be bringing this to you, which is also something you talked about in that fabulous event, where the other thing I was going to say about that event at Great Escape at Aries Inlet is when you were talking before about your question asking and your interviewing, that was an exceptional interview. Your questions were incredible. It was like,
oh, thank you.
Being held or something. And they were all different. Oh. For people who listen to the podcast regularly, Catherine has interviewed me twice about the hummingbird effect, and she asked completely different questions. So that was extraordinary. But anyway, the recommendation that I'm so excited to give to you, Naiad is a biopic of a woman called Diana Naiad, who was a marathon swimmer, who is a marathon swimmer. It is, she is played in the film by Annette Bening, who is exceptional. And her best friend in the film, Bonnie, is played by Jodie Foster, also exceptional in the film. So acting, production, everything incredible. But the story of Diana Naiad, and Alice Robinson recommended me this to me, but it's also been all over my feeds. Diana Naiad tried to swim. Her biggest dream was to swim from Florida to Cuba, or Cuba to Florida. It had never been done before. It's like 52 hours in the water, 109 miles.
Oh my God.
There's sharks and all kinds of stuff and currents. She attempted it when she was 28 and she didn't make it. She'd done all the other ones, like the English Channel and all the other stuff. She didn't make it. And she kind of stopped swimming after that. On her 60th birthday, she decides that she wants to do it. And I kid you not, it was the kind of film, I watched it with Etta, my 10-year-old. There's a bit, people want to have a look. There's a little bit of a historical child abuse kind of story in the background. So people might want to just think about that if they're going to watch it with their kids. But other than that, really, really good for kids. And she is phenomenal. So she tries and she tries again. And I won't spoil it because I didn't know the real story. And so I suggest don't Google it, like watch it so that you can experience, because, you know, we had tears, clapping, crying, fist pumping. Oh. It sounds like
even better than the Mighty Ducks.
Yes, it is. It's like the Mighty Ducks. And the other thing that Alice said, which I think was really, really apt, was, I've never seen such a great metaphor for novel writing as the experience that she goes through, but just cannot recommend highly enough. And it's on Netflix, so it's kind of available to all those people.
Achievement later in life. Like the early achievement gets so much of a spotlight, but that 60 go. Yeah.
Please.
All right, it's on my list.
And let me know how you went. And in my listing, I went back, and this is slightly controversial because you didn't want to hear anything about this podcast. So I'm going to be really brief. Anna Downs recommended the podcast Ghost Story. I listened to it on the way to and from an event for Book Grove last week. It is so good. And the reason that it is so good, all the things that Anna said, the way that it's framed and put together. So yes, there's a ghost story, but also it's a true crime. And it involves, and because the investigative journalist is in the middle of this family, it also has these extraordinary kind of emotional family dynamics as well. It's just, it's so well put together. I'm always listening to those kinds of prolifically successful podcasts and going, wow, how did they work out when to drop what bits of information? Yeah. It's like working out how a crime novel is put together. I just think, yeah, it is so interesting, so worthwhile listening to. So even though I know it's not completely your cup of tea, Catherine, I'm just going to recommend it for everyone.
Oh, I wish I could listen. I'm too much of a fraidy cat. I'm too much of a believer.
Well, I love that.
Are we all believers now? Did you come, like, if you were a bit more of a skeptical person going in, are you like, were you not skeptical going in?
It's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. Okay. But I've got a foot in both camps. You know, I've got the old hippie shop woo-woo in me, so I'm not a complete skeptic. But it's so interesting. And just the ideas about that and what the kind of psychological stuff of how we believe what we believe is very interesting, which is also a really key theme in Sweet Bobby. Have I recommended that already?
You have recommended it to me, but I haven't listened. I've been too busy manifesting.
Okay, that was a good one. I realized that. I have already recommended Sweet Bobby, so I won't recommend
it. Oh, no, you only just texted it to me.
Did I? Yeah. Okay, then let me tell you. Sweet Bobby is a hoax podcast by the team, I think they're called, by the team that brought Hoaxed, which I also listen to. I think Sweet Bobby is better. It involves a woman in the UK who was catfished over a 10-year period. And it is extraordinary. And you got to keep listening till episode 3. That's all I'm going to say. But it's really, really interesting. Again, great production, but just the story blew my mind. That was one recommended by my dear friend, Julia. Excellent recommendation. And one last one, which is book related. Alice Bishop recommended to me the other night the Book Riot podcast, which is a US-based podcast. I think they put out some other ones as well. Two people whose names I've forgotten, who talk about the book industry, hot books, marketing, books that they're recommending, kind of stories that are going on. And so I've only listened to a couple of episodes, but the one that I listened to was talking about the top 10 kind of Amazon books of the year versus the top 10 Barnes and Noble books or whatever. And just for people who are interested in that kind of stats stuff, really a lot of insight into how all of those things get worked out and the kinds of criteria and weighting for different things, but also an unintentional, I suppose, effect of listening to this podcast is that you realize how massive the US market is and how bloody tiny the Australian market is. Like the figures, the book sales figures they are talking about, the data they are talking about is just off the planet. So I'm going to kind of dive into that and listen to a few more of those. It's nicely done. There's a lot of, which is interesting because this is something we've talked about a lot on the podcast. There's a lot of, sponsorship ads, by people who have published books or their publishers, which, you know, I just skipped through now, but that is a good one. So that is my listening. Did you have books? Have you been reading? Or you've just been spiraling?
I just have been spiraling,
The shoulder surgery spiral.
Oh, my God. The prospect of shoulder surgery and someone having an intense recovery period in a small house is – and Carney was even like, I can't sleep in the same bed as you. So then you're like, where am I going to sleep? Like just the logistics of that, very draining. But
at the same time as you're trying to be kind, right?
Yeah.
Because your partner is hurting. At the same time.
And he's disappointed. And
as that you are ready to kick them out the door.
Yes. Mm. And also just going, that means I'm every drop off and pick up. That means I'm doing, his training sessions as well as my basketball trainings. And so the fact that it's not happening in that form makes me so happy. But I think I really like listening. Yeah. I'm surprised I haven't been reading as much as well. Normally TV is the thing that drops off, but listening is I was researching actually Mia Friedman, to do an interview with Mia Friedman. And Mamma Mia has 52 podcasts. Like, it makes me think, is that the primary way? Because I never look at the Mamma Mia website, but I do consume podcasts now.
And then. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I know. It's just knows? That it's just that you have like that Netflix problem of like, what do I listen to? Anyway, yes. Here's some things that you can read for you so that you can put these to your list. I read my first Claire Keegan. I read Foster. I picked it up that night, actually, that we were
at Great Escape. That has been recommended to me too. The universe is telling me to read that.
The universe is telling you to read this. It is, look at it. It's tiny. Mm-hmm. It's like, and I think all her books are like this. It's like less than 100 pages. I read
Foster. What do we think first. That is? 20,000 words? 30,000 words? 30,000.
Maybe. 20? Maybe not. Maybe 20. Maybe 20. It is, though, I mean, lots of people have said very profound things about Claire Keegan. It's like kind of the perfect short story, extended short story. There is a whole world and whole lifetimes in this book. And I'm really excited. People actually on Instagram when I posted it were like, watch the Quiet Girl movie, which I believe is based on this, on Foster. And I think most people recommend to go to small things like these next. So adding that to my
I look at
reading.
Claire Keegan and think Sally Rooney. Is that like a comparison or not even?
No, okay. I think more Ann Patchetty.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But like more spare.
Yeah.
If that, yeah, that would be my kind of, kind of take on that. But yeah, beautiful. And like a 2 cup of tea kind of a book. You know, it's not even a whole afternoon. You just really, you could just put the kettle on twice. So
I'm going to take that. That's going to be my first book.
I think do that.
South Coast.
Another one that I read really quickly this week was Karina May's Duck à l'Orange for Breakfast. I forget to do that part, which is her debut rom-com. And I just realized when I posted about it, she's got a brand new one out too called Never Ever Forever, which is just out. But the first one, foodie rom-com, really fun, and has some unexpected things. So a woman who has recently split up with her partner, you know, is encouraged to get on Tinder, has this great kind of online chat with Johnny. They end up doing some recipe testing before they meet each other. It's got brain surgery in it. It's got recipes in the back. It was just very fun. Everything that you know, would expect and want out of a rom-com. And I think partly that is because Karina May, along with Claire Fletcher, whose book Love Match we've also talked about this year, they host that rom-com pod, which we've talked about, and they're so smart. They are so across the genre. They know exactly how it works.
That podcast is a really good podcast. Romance as a genre has tropes, which I didn't realize until it was pointed out to me, but in their episodes, they go through the tropes and examples of the tropes and sort of dissect them. It's a really good informative podcast for anyone who writes, even
if you write
outside that space.
Yeah. So if you're looking for your kind of feel good, fun rom-com, highly recommend that one. And the other one that I just want to mention is one that I've been very early to have to have an early copy of. It is called Cool Water and it's by Mifanwe Jones, who hasn't written a book for a while, but her
Leap, which was shortlisted
for the Miles Franklin. I really loved this. It's beautiful. It's set across two time periods around a dam up in Queensland. The story of really inherited trauma over generations, around the dam, around men in families. There's an extraordinary female character, just kind of a deep book that also by the end of it, I was kind of heart palpitations about what was going to happen. So it has this real kind of dramatic drive. But just really beautifully rendered characters on the page. She's just a sublime kind of writer. So I think that's out in April next year. So that's something that people can look forward to.
Great one. Have you got looking forward to that? Because I liked her previous one.
You've just put Claire Keegan on your summer reading list. Have you already packed your books? What have you got on your summer reading list?
I am so behind. I am so behind that I bought Richard Osman's latest book like 10 days ago and I have not opened it.
Have you read all of them or other ones of
them? I have, yeah. Yeah, and you love them. Genuinely funny. Yeah, he's a great writer. I am gutted that he was out. I would have like moved heaven and earth to try and interview him. He was out like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They're genuinely funny books. Like,
okay.
I had actually read maybe the first two, three pages of the latest one. And he's pretty good. Yeah. Perfect beach read. Like,
all right. So that's on your beach lead. I'm going to go through my beach read list very quickly just so that we can add these links in. I don't even know that this is out yet, but Held by Anne Michaels, who wrote Fugitive Pieces. I'm really looking forward to that. Fugitive Pieces was this novel that had the most profound impact on me when I was like a 19-year-old backpacker. So
you mentioned Homecoming not that long ago.
Cynthia Voigt.
Yes, Cynthia Voigt. And that sent me down that rabbit hole. And now I have it sitting on my bedside table.
Oh, my goodness.
Read it.
Yeah. Adding that to the packing list. I've also got a couple that I have not finished. So Northwoods by Daniel Mason, which I'm really enjoying. Women and Children by Tony Birch. I opened the first page and then got distracted and I haven't got back to it yet. So I'm looking forward to taking that away. A couple of others in my pile that I've got and can't wait to read. Gunflower, Laura J. McKay's short stories.
Ooh, I love
this. Spider and Her Demons, which is the debut from Sydney Koo. That's a YA one. Really looking forward to getting into that. I suppose I want to read Prophet Song by Paul Lynch, which just won the Booker. Well, I say it like that.
Wow, that really sounds hesitant.
Wanky
God,
way to say
do
it,
you?
It?
You really don't want to read that.
No, I do. I do. I've got.
Sorry, Paul.
Yes. Sorry, Paul. No, I did. I heard someone talk about it and it sounds really interesting. And obviously it just won the Booker. But you know how there's that hesitation where you're like, oh, it won the Booker. Now everyone's going to read it. So I'm going to read something else. That's it. I don't that contrariness in myself, but I feel like it's an instinct, which is unfortunate. And in the same way, I kind of want to read Rebecca Yarros's Iron Flame. Because
is this a series, Iron Flame? Why is Iron Flame doing so well?
It sold 45,000 copies in Australia in its first week. 45,000.
Had people heard of it before?
Romanticy. Oh, I believe that's okay. The new genre. If you are an Iron Flame fan, please tell us, educate us on this. But Romanticy, they were talking about it in that Book Riot podcast and saying the interesting thing they said about it is that, okay, so there's a few romanticies out right now. There's going to be big ones. They'll get paid a lot of money. There'll be like 30 of them come out next year and only some of them are going to hit. And that's just the way the world works. And I was like, oh, God, imagine being in that genre. Yeah, so that's what is packed for my list. Okay, let's get on to our news. Shall we get on to our news?
Yeah, let's do that.
Can you tell, Catherine?
What is the news, Kate?
Are a little reluctant.
Yeah, it feels funny, doesn't it?
It does feel funny.
Feels like some of the air has left my body.
I know.
Or the room.
But we're just going to tell you let's do an intro to it. After season 6, which has been huge, let's warm up a bit, Catherine.
Okay.
We've done 47 episodes this year in season 6. We've done 23 featured books. And I wanted to note that there was a really lovely post, did you see it, from Life as a Book Lover, who's a bookstagrammer last week, about how many of the featured books she's heard about on the pod and gone on to purchase, which makes me really, really happy.
Yeah, that's ace because the book market is tough and a lot of the featured books have been debut authors. And I reckon, well, it probably stands up by statistics, which we do not have to hand, that big name sellers will always do pretty well.
They
like
will.
The people that you've heard of, the Andy Griffiths and the whoever, the Iron, what's the Iron one?
Rebecca Yarros.
Will do really well, but it's pretty hard market to crack as a debut. So that is a particularly nice thing to hear.
That is a particularly nice thing. We had 8 follower first time episodes with the wonderful Megan Rogers and they were very popular and people really loved it.
Very popular. A lot of people banked them, like did all the time.
Yeah. We had 11, I think, Masters episodes in the end. They were huge. They were very popular. Kate Kennedy, Kevin Wilson, Amy Kaufman, R.A. Spratt, Ling Ma, Brian Moylan, Alison Bell, Jesse Stevens, Tim Winton, Lucy Treloar, Richard Flanagan. I feel like that was a big year, a good year for us.
Yeah, that was good. That was fun. We had our eye on some of those authors for some time. I got a lot of cachet from my children for interviewing R.A. Spratt.
Yeah.
Whom I love. If you... Oh, she's so good. If you have a child, my kids are 8 and 10. They absolutely are obsessed with R.A. Spratt's podcast, Bedtime Stories with R.A. Spratt. I think, I don't know how long it's been going for, not that long, and a million plus downloads. Like, it's such a good podcast for kids.
Love it. Go, you good thing, R.A. Spratt. We had two Hummingbird deep dives, including the excellent spoiler episode, which I must say I have recommended a lot when I've gone out and done events and then people are like, no, don't do any spoilers during it because they haven't. And I said, look, if you want to go and listen to the spoiler, because that was really good. We had two awkward conversations. We had a lot of awkward conversations off air too, but we had two awkward conversations that we gave you. We ran out of steam on these. We were planning on more.
Oh, too hard. It was too many awkwards.
Too many awkwards.
Very.
One on money and one on endorsements. Both of them were in the top 10 of what you listened to. For numerous reasons, we imagine. They were fun, but
yeah, they were fun. You have to think about them, don't you?
Yeah, you do. There was too much thinking involved. We had two festival convos, one with Right Around the Murray and one with Willie Litfest. We did that whole debut crew 2023 thing with all the introduction reels, even though we sometimes left people off, but we got them up in the end, which was one of the great joys. And thank you, Jill, for getting us these stats. We have had an increase of 27% from the preceding 12 months, which is very, very good. And we've hit the 320 mark. So 322,000 all-time listens. So it's been our biggest.
So 100,000, well over 100,000 this year. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's really, when you look at the graph, up it goes. It
goes up in a.
Yeah. Which makes it, yes, line. Exactly. Best season yet, our biggest. Which possibly makes the news we have a little unexpected.
Okay, so it is a little bit of a two-parter. The first part is deep breath. We are taking a break from the first time podcast in this form next year. We will not be doing our catch-ups or featured books or follow a first timer. This means that as much as we've loved getting introduced to so many writers and their new books, we're not going to be accepting pitches from publishers or from authors in 2024. Kate, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I feel like we're doing Pilates and it's the breathing. Like,
it feels really breathy, doesn't it?
Exhale. Yeah, it's very breathy. Okay, so I'm going to give this context and I've written clear notes so that I don't go off topic. Way back at the start of this year, I listened to an interview on the No Filter podcast where Mia Friedman talked to the UK writer and podcaster Emma Gannon, who hosted Control-Alt-Delete, and she's written books like The Multi-Hyphen Method and The Success Myth, and I just found out she's written a novel, Olive.
As you list her achievements, have you read The Success Myth? I feel like I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Yeah, I started listening to it on audio book. You know, it's not completely my vibe, but right. I like getting her in little bits. And I have definitely listened to episodes of Control-Alt-Delete.
Yeah.
She is younger than us, very, very successful. And the context for this big news that she shared in her newsletter is that she had, you know, she was in the Forbes top 100 new people to watch, etc. She was flown out to a private island to be at this conference and she realized she wasn't doing what she loved. So what she said in this apparently very short newsletter about why she was finishing her phenomenally successful podcast, she wrote this: the hard bit isn't always closing something down when it's no longer working. It's closing something down when it is. And that idea just really hit me. And I want to be super clear that we are not as wealthy or famous or successful as
Emma Gannon.
You need
to be clear on that.
I feel like we have to be very clear. And further, we're not giving all this away necessarily, but that idea of leaving something that you love and that is working really spoke to me, because that's not the general vibe, right?
Well, we kind of expect things to whimper out to a, you know, to reach a peak, come down, and then kind of end. But it is very Seinfeld, actually, that idea of going out and leaving people wanting more.
Yeah, so that really spoke to me, because, of course, it kind of goes without saying, I love this podcast. I love everything that it's given us since we began 6 years ago. I love talking to you every fortnight, sometimes more than every fortnight, and all the things we've spoken of. I said about how I went back to the first ep of this season. I haven't done what you did and gone right back to the start. But when you think about it, your debut book, the messy middles of all of our manuscripts.
Absolute joy of, because life can get really busy, and this has been a thing that we have had to find space, even though we haven't necessarily always had the space. We've had to find this half hour in which to talk, and it has been such a gift. I think in COVID, this was, my sanity perhaps teetered in both directions at points in time, but this helped me so very much.
I completely agree, and I think I shall always go back to the episode where we smushed all those little bits of COVID lockdowns together, and it was just us going, okay, we're back in lockdown. Okay, we're back in lockdown.
Like, I actually am just getting chills.
Shivers. And we know too from listeners how many people contacted us during that time and after to say, oh, you know, really kept me going.
Made a difference.
People listen to a lot of podcasts. I love speaking to writers. That will never change. It still blows my mind how many writers we've got to speak to, new ones, and then all those ones that we put on our list start.
Yes.
And like, I wonder if we'll ever get to speak to this person.
Oh, amazing. But the degree to which we had to beg in the beginning, remember, like, we would talk about it and say, I think we could get Mel Cheng. But I would always be like, you have to email. You be the one.
Oh, my gosh. Imagine going back. We should go back and look at those early emails.
Oh, God. Trying to get
all the things. And I think I love most of all engaging with our listeners, hearing what hits, hearing people who have found writers or found new books that they've discovered through the pod, where especially those people who contact us and say, I've followed the pod since the start and I just really wanted to let you know I've got my first book coming out.
That is awesome. That is so, so awesome.
That's a big high. But as we have both said numerous times, it has been an enormous project. It is hours and hours of reading and thinking and researching and talking and interviewing and editing and email and show notes. And for me, I think I've really had to evaluate that time this year and say to myself, hang on, those hours and hours, I could be writing a novel. And so I've gone back to Charlotte Wood's, that beautiful angst-filled email that she sent us, and then the conversation that we had on the podcast where she said to us, oh, I'm so sorry, I can't do the agony aunt anymore. And she talked about how she had to put boundaries in to give energy back to her writing. And I've really taken that on board. Everyone who listens to the podcast knows I basically listen to everything Charlotte Wood says and do what she tells us.
She's a very wise woman.
She's very wise. So, you know, in 2024, I'm really trying to put those boundaries in around a bunch of things like teaching and endorsing and the podcast, because I want to write a book and I want to write it fast and I need energy for that. And I think that I'm hoping too that, like we got from Charlotte when she made that call, that it was kind of permission giving for us. We were like, oh, that's what it looks like when you say, no, I'm not doing that thing, and thus I've got more energy for this other thing, that kind of Mary Oliver, One Wild and Precious Life kind of idea. So that's why I'm taking a break and we're resting the pod, but that's only the first part of our news. Catherine, what else is our news?
So that is the first part. The second part is, it is not all completely over. So I am going to come back with something slightly different next year. Friend of the pod, Shay, has explained it's called a diffusion line. Does this put you in mind of a like a reed diffuser oil type
that
thing?
Okay. It in my mind, but I like that, and I will now.
No, it's a terrible image. No,
as those little puffs that come out in the middle of the room when you're doing Pilates or whatever.
Sweet, sweet smelling diffusion line. Basically, it is kind of a spin-off. So the diffusion line is as yet unnamed. I'm still figuring bits of it out. But the key kind of point is, after 6 years of talking to writers, I want to keep talking to writers. I very much have that bug. But I want to branch out a little and speak to other interesting people as well. So people like comedians, other types of creatives, entrepreneurs, sports, reality, whatever that kind of looks like. So the new series will have a slightly different scope. When I think back of when we started, think back to when we started this podcast, I had super specific things that I was interested in and I wanted to know everything about, as is my personality, to become obsessed with a particular thing. I was a debut author. I wanted to know what the hell I was supposed to be doing, how others had done it, how they'd felt, all of that stuff. But now, having two books in the world, another one coming out next year and one coming out the year after that, I am interested in slightly different things. So the spin-off will be less about the debut experience and more about what you and I kind of call as a shorthand, the head game of being a writer. So not so much the craft of writing, what it is to host events, or even about a specific book. When I think of the Venn diagram that the podcast kind of sits in the middle of, one part is this kind of woo-woo element of how people dream about what they want to achieve in life, what are the things they want, be that manifestation or visualization or whatever. That's kind of one bucket. Another bucket is what they actually do. So routines, what precisely they do after they wake up in the morning. Should I be having an ice bath? This kind of element. And then the other part.
Oh my God, can you please do an experiment where you have an ice bath every morning?
I really want an ice bath. I think you have to fill them with ice that you get at the, like at the petrol station, I think is how.
For sure.
Which I didn't really connect the dots on. I'm not sure how.
You
I
could like
that
go
would
in with the neighbors. Like surely not everyone in a street needs a.
Well,
ice bath. Maybe
I think
they
it's
do.
Insulated. So it must. I don't think I'd want to go in with my neighbors.
No, that's a good point. I just literally was thinking
some
through that.
Pretty odd neighbors, like known through the WhatsApp group that I've muted. Oh my God. definitely not going in with the neighbors, but it is insulated. So it's not like you get one use out of the ice bath. Anyway, so I love that stuff. The other part is this like Ben Crow element. I always have in my mind that the book, The Competition, my second novel, had this element of satirizing life coaching. And that I both see the humor in it, but kind of love it as well to be a part of it. This idea of you can learn from successful people and you can see what things you can incorporate into your own life and you can climb a really massive mountain. But what happens when you get to the top of the mountain and you just think either what next or so what, or it is mildly disappointing.
I don't like the view from here. Yeah.
Exactly. How do I achieve all these cool things that I want to achieve, but how do I be happy or content if I achieve none of it? And I think about that in the writing realm in terms of, you know, people in writers groups or people starting out and really, really desperately wanting to see their book published, but it might not happen. And that kind of example can exist across sort of multiple life experiences, different kind of things that people hope to achieve. So that's kind of the long-winded vibe of the podcast. There are some really particular people I want to talk to. I wasn't going to say.
Have you put them on your to-be magnetic list?
Yes. In the spirit of manifestation, Ben Crow, I have interacted with his people multiple times. I desperately want to speak to Ben Crow.
Come on,
Zoe Foster Blake. And my ultimate, I know we have talked about your ultimates like Jennifer Egan and Elizabeth Gilbert before. Mm-hmm. Seinfeld would be on my ultimate
list. Oh, my goodness.
I'd bloody love to speak to Seinfeld.
I'm putting it in the back of my little black book for you, and we are going to manifest this. Also, can I just say that right now our listeners won't be able to see this, but you are sitting in front of your magnificent wallpaper of the mountain, and I just feel like that should be your new look vibe. You're going to be my new Tools of the Titans, Catherine Collette. Tools of the Titans.
That's the plan. Yeah, it's something I'm excited about. I'm still obviously in the same way that you write a book and you start with visuals and vibes and loose themes, I'm still bedding it out. But I think it serves you well in life to follow your curiosity. And that's the direction
absolutely
I will head.
I am so excited for this and for you and this new mountainous adventure. So let's be practical. What does this all mean? We are going to follow up this last episode with our summer series. You'll be able to catch up on a bunch of episodes that you may have missed. We know it's always popular as people are lounging by the beach. So that will happen as per usual.
That'll kick off from Jan. Then come back in March to hear me, Catherine, and something new. I think it'll be great for writers and creatives and just for people in general. In terms of the Patreon, there are 22 of you, and we are so, so grateful to all of you. Some of you have been supporting us from the get-go, so thank you. We are going to put a pause on Patreon payments from next week. The way that the pause works, we have to do it as a monthly kind of thing. So basically we recommend that you cancel those payments from your end, and we'll see what happens with the new series. And if I end up setting up a Patreon for it, I will let people know.
Let's also remember that as much as I'm trying to be better at no's, I'm still a yes girl at heart. Jennifer Egan, Elizabeth Gilbert, Anthony Doerr, if you're listening and you finally say yes to my emails, you will all hear about it. And similarly, our listeners may be surprised by a pop-up festival conversation every now and again. Catherine and I get asked to do that a bit, and we would love to be able to continue to do that. So that might just pop up in your feed when you're least expecting it.
Our Instagram is going to go quiet. We'll probably post about the summer series, but it won't be super busy. You'll get an email reply from us from next week if you want to get in touch with us via email, but you can get in touch with us directly. The best way is perhaps through Instagram if people have Instagram accounts.
You can also catch up on all the things that we're doing, including Catherine's new series, through our newsletters. For mine, that is The Bow Bird. For Catherine's, that is Highbrow, Lowbrow, Mediumbrow. That is where you will get all our news from here on in. And we do want to make sure that our listeners are getting lots of AusLit podcasts in their ears. So if you're not already listening and subscribing to these ones, I'm going to just do a very quick list and shout out, and you'll find all the links in our show notes. These are some of the ones that we love and listen to. Secrets from the Green Room with Emma Gold and Karen Viggers. I've just been on that one and proposed a new theory of momentum in reviewing. Ooh. I don't have anything to back up that theory other than kind of a vibe. So you can go and check that one out. James
vibe.
And Ashley Stay at Home with Ashley Collegian Blunt and James Mackenzie Watson. That rom-com pod with Claire Fletcher and Karina May, which we spoke about today. The Word Count pod with Fiona Taylor, Joe Dixon and Jack Ellum. The Garrett, of course, with Astra Edwards, and Read This with Michael Williams, which is a bit of a favourite of yours, Catherine. The Writers Book Club podcast with Michelle Barraclough, which is an excellent one for deep dives. Margaret River Writers and Readers Festival podcast with Jen Bowden. Words and Nerds podcast with Danny V and friends. I mean, there's enough listening there for at least 7 years of AusLit in your ears. So get into some of those.
Yeah, there's absolutely no shortage. Now, we have never been very good at signing off, Kate. So the main thing to say is it has been 6 years of the First Time podcast. Next year is going to be different. It's a pause on this format. We have a new spin-off series. I keep saying we. I'm going to have to start saying I.
I know.
But that's okay. We may still pop in together for festivals and special things. As
obviously,
said, it's a pause. It's not currently
it's
forever.
It's a pause. It's a pause. And you have no need to worry, dear listeners, that Catherine and I will still be speaking to each
other.
Yes,
that's right.
You just won't be privy to the conversations. We want to say a massive thank you to everyone who has been a guest on the show, those we had to beg at the start, and those that have come more willingly later on. A couple more thank yous. This year, Utkarsh Anand helped us out with audio production when our very long-time producer, Phoebe Ady, was overseas. Phoebe has been with us since day one. We could not have done this without her. She is exceptional at everything she does, and I'm very glad that Phoebe will still be around getting Catherine in her ear. Jill Langhammer of Literary Listings joined us 2 years ago, has given us so much energy and time and enthusiasm and smarts. We're so incredibly grateful for all of Jill's work to help the First Time podcast grow over her time with us. But the biggest thank you goes to our listeners.
Yeah, we have absolutely loved being in your ears. This is not the last time, but it's the last time like this for a little while. I will see you in March. When will we see you, Kate?
You'll see me everywhere. Anyone can ever shut me up. But if you do hear too much of me, tell me to get back to the desk and write this bloody novel. That's what I'll be doing.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the First Time podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.